Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life is songs of grief with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. It's temper all the times I've tried.
Hello and welcome to Court Appointed. I am your co-host, Riley Smurl, a future law student interested in all things legal and illegal.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl, and I am just your dad. Well, Riley, it's been a while.
It has been.
We've had a lot of things going on, been very busy people, but we're trying to get back at it as much as we can. Be a little hit and miss here for a couple weeks.
It's been a busy few weeks.
Yeah, we're both involved in theater this summer, and between me and your mom directing and you being a star of the show.
And also directing
the pre-show. That's mm-hmm. right. So we have been very busy and we've had to let some things slide. And unfortunately it was this podcast, but we're back this week.
Yep.
We may not be back every week, but we'll be back every here and there as much as we can.
And eventually summer theater will be over.
That's right. Once we get past June, it'll let up a little bit. And once we get towards the end of July, we'll be back on track.
Yep.
Hopefully bigger and better than ever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, you found us another crime that was discovered on a beach.
Yes.
Was a missing person or not a missing person. We don't know who this person was.
Still don't know who this person was.
And you brought this to us. So tell us about it.
Yeah. So when we were talking about the Somerton man last week, it actually made me think of another case I had seen on an online unsolved mystery series that I had always thought was really interesting, which is the Lady of the Dunes. She was a woman found on a beach in Provincetown, Massachusetts in 1974. And she was still never identified, just like the Somerton man. They built the same kind of bust of her face and did a composite sketch. Her body's been exhumed 3 different times now, trying to get some DNA, trying to figure out who she is. No one's reported her missing. No one has any idea.
One of the things I find interesting about this, and we found it in the Somerton Man, in other words, no matter how old the cases are, there are groups of people out there that are scattered across the world that work on these cases.
Yeah.
They all find connections where they can, and it's kind of like this is their hobby.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that. And the same type thing has happened with this. People have been involved in this, trying to find clues, trying to link things together, making suggestions of possible theories,
mm-hmm.
following up on leads that are developed and things like that. And it's just like, well, let's see, I've got a few hours to kill tonight. Instead of, playing a video game or watching TV, I'm going to go see if I can solve this cold case.
Well, I mean, it's like that Netflix documentary that Don't F With Cats or whatever mm-hmm. it was. It was all about that guy who made videos online of him like killing people, but it was all internet sleuths that solved it.
Yeah, and the thing that got is when he abused those cats, that's what got them all riled up and mm-hmm. trying to find him.
Mm-hmm. And they found him before he became probably an eventual serial killer.
Exactly.
But yeah, that was all internet people. And this one has had some, which we'll get into after we talk about it, but it's got some pretty interesting theories that have come up as recently as just, 2 years ago, people throwing out ideas.
Yes, the Lady of the Dunes, as she has become known, was found on July 26, 1974, in Provincetown, Massachusetts. The body was found by a 12-year-old girl that was out walking her dog, and they found the body that was unclothed, but it had, like, her jeans, I assume they're her jeans, that were folded neatly and placed beneath her face because she was laid face down in the sand of the beach. And there was a
blue bandana
mm-hmm. and she had both hands removed and one forearm, and she had been strangled so hard it had nearly decapitated her.
Yes. And she had blunt force trauma to half of her head.
Yeah, left side of her head was smashed in.
She was laying on a beach towel as well.
And they determined that the the blunt force trauma that crushed in part of her skull was probably caused by, it was a military, what they call it, like an excavating tool, which is, I don't know if you've seen it. I'm assuming this is what it is. It's those shovels that fold up. I've seen them in military gear before where the handle like folds down so that they're very easy to carry. They don't stick up. So I'm assuming that's what they were talking about when they described that. So it was like a military tool that you would have.
What's interesting to me that I, lots of interesting things, but when they found her, they said she had probably been there anywhere between 10 days and 3 weeks. They couldn't exactly determine how long, but this was only about 15 feet away from the nearest little road. So it wasn't that far into the beach or into some sort of, you know, hidden area. And the footprints that they said probably belonged to her killer were still there. So, you know, sometime between 10 days and 3 weeks, and you have two sets of footprints they said were pretty clear. You could tell the size of the shoe and everything. And they said you could tell it was a heavy step and like a size 10 shoe or something. Two weeks or, you know, up to 3 weeks later.
Two sets of footsteps and the tire tracks leading away that were, you know, in proximity to where the body was. And yet they had no clues. They searched all around and found no other clues. And once again, they arrived at, like the Somerton man, that she had been placed there. That this was not, the crime didn't happen there. There wasn't like there was blood all over the place or anything like that. So that it happened in a different place and she was placed there. And they said the body was definitely posed and was also laid there with great care, which is unusual.
It is unusual.
I mean, if it's just a random attack that somebody attacks somebody, usually they don't take care. Usually something like this is more intimate, suggesting that possibly the killer had some connection with the person. So that's what has been so hard about this case. They don't even know who this person is. So that they can you know, get together a list of suspects of people that knew her. Boyfriends, ex-boyfriends, husbands, whatever. Another thing I found interesting, they have not been able to determine, they were not able to determine the age of the victim. Well, they said that it was a range from 25 to 40 and even up to 49.
Yeah, this even says 20 to 49.
Yeah, and for that kind of range, for them not to be able to tell, that also makes it more difficult for them to narrow down who this person might be. And they haven't had any matching descriptions of anyone, even though they've circulated reconstructions of what she probably looked like and everything. They haven't had anyone that has come forward. Well, they have had some people come forward, but they've been able to disprove them.
And a lot of people think, you know, the her missing hands, and she also is missing a few teeth, were all, you know, done with the goal of the killer to not have her be identified. So some people have said maybe the killer knew she was also a criminal, or for some reason would have fingerprints in some sort of government database, because this was, you know, the 70s. So that was pretty much the main source of, there wasn't as much DNA testing and genealogy type testing going on. So it seems like they thought, I'll get rid of her fingerprints and some teeth so they can't do dental identification and no one will figure out who she was.
Yeah. And they said that even though she'd had some of her teeth removed, there were some that were left that were identified as dental work, including crowns, that were, that was fairly expensive dental work. So this was not just like some drifter wandering around. They said the style of dental work was a New York style, whatever that means, but evidently it was something fancy to where they felt like that this person came from somewhere, you know, it came from somewhere with money. It wasn't like she was just a transient or something.
Right. And it cost between $5,000 and $10,000 to have all that done. So obviously some sort of wealth, especially, at that time. But that was it. That was all they had was these teeth that they circulated to lots of dental magazines and local dentists and as many dental organizations as they could. No one was able to claim it or identify it or give any ideas to who it could have been, where it could have been. No, that was it.
Now, In 1987, a Canadian woman told a friend that she saw her father strangle a woman in Massachusetts around 1972. And police attempted to locate this woman, but were unsuccessful. Another woman told police the reconstruction of the victim looked like her sister, who disappeared from Boston in 1974. But investigators also followed a lead involving missing criminal Rory Jean Kessinger, who would have been 25 years old at the time of the murder. She broke out of jail in 1973, and authorities saw a resemblance between Kessinger and the victim. However, DNA from Kessinger's mother did not match the victim.
That theory actually was so convincing for a while. That was what sparked the exhumation of her body, because it was exhumed in 1980, in 2000, and then again in 2013. I think the exhumation in 2000, I believe, was because she looked so much like this missing criminal, and because she had gone missing around that time and broken out of jail, which apparently the prison she was held at was very close to this area. And she was given a hacksaw, which was part of her escape, where she sawed her way out of the bars and used tied up bed sheets to climb out of the window. So they thought, well, she had these things with her. There's a hacksaw someone could have used to get her hands off. There's a, you know, string of bed towels someone could have used to strangle her to the point where she almost would be decapitated. So this was so convincing even to authorities. That was why they exhumed her body again. But yeah, it did not match her mom.
Now, there was a couple others that involved a serial killer and a mobster that they thought that she might be connected to. There was a serial killer in the area where this happened named Tony Costa, and he was an initial suspect, but later eliminated because he died in May of 1974, and the victim was found in July of 1974. So,
well, that's a pretty good alibi.
Yeah, he was dead. Therefore, he was probably innocent, but he was still dead.
Yeah. Well, there was another serial killer, Haddon Clark, who's still in prison to this day, but he claimed it and said he had done it, and said, tried to give details and stuff, but they said that it was skeptical because he had confessed to many crimes that they later found out he did not commit, and he only gave details that were in the news.
Yeah, and they said he suffers from paranoid schizophrenia and had confessed to some other false confessions.
Yeah.
So they couldn't believe that. Now, you may have heard of a mobster named Whitey Bulger, who he recently died.
Here in West Virginia.
He was murdered in prison in 2018. But he had rolled over on the mob with a bunch of stuff. So he had been, you know, hiding out and stuff like that since he had. But they said that he was a suspect because he was known for removing his victims' teeth so they couldn't be identified when he would kill people. So they thought there might be some connection to him, but they never were able to prove anything on that connection either.
Mm-hmm. And there was some... There was a woman who was younger at the time living in this area who said she knew Bulger had been around this woman and had heard stories and actually was the first one to discover her body but didn't tell anyone because she was young and she was scared. But police didn't believe many of these stories.
Well, before we continue further with this interesting crime and bring in some other people of note that speculated on it, we would like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
Who is it?
Who is it, you say? Why, it's our good friends at Green Chef. Green Chef lets you choose from a wide array of easy-to-follow recipes, perfect for keto, paleo, and plant-powered diets, or even if you just want to eat in a more balanced way.
And Green Chef's expert chefs design flavorful recipes that go way beyond ordinary for a diverse array of meal plans and plenty of options to choose from each week so you never get bored.
Everything is hand-picked, featuring organic veggies and high-quality proteins, delivered to your door, pre-measured, and mostly prepped in insulated packaging.
And you can feel good about getting it, too, because it's the most sustainable meal kit, offsetting 100% of its direct carbon emissions in plastic packaging in every box.
And Riley and I have both prepared Green Chef meals before, and I don't consider myself a cook.
Me either.
But we made what I would consider gourmet meals.
It was really good.
They were very good. We loved them. The one time we prepared a bunch of them all together, and we ate out of them for about the rest of the week.
All three of them that came in the box.
Yeah, we just went ahead and slapped them all together. And it took us like an hour to make the three meals.
Yeah, which tells you how quick it would be if you just did one.
And that's three meals for four people each.
Right, yeah.
So that was quite a bit of cooking. So, you know, you can prepare one for just a pair of you or something like that in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And if a big dummy like me can follow the instructions, I'd say anybody could. So, for all our court-appointed listeners, what we're asking you to do is go to greenchef.com/90court and use code 90court to get $90 off, including free shipping.
That's greenchef.com/90court and use code 90court to get $90 off, including free shipping.
And you too can share in the number one meal kit for eating well.
So I have, I think, my personal favorite theory because of where it came from and who came up with it, and also because of how wild it seems, but I guess also possible. And it actually came from Stephen King's son,
Joe Hill,
who, you know, in 2018 was on Tumblr and on Reddit and was like, "Hey guys, I was watching Jaws and I have this theory," because Jaws was shot on Martha's Vineyard and it was shot between May and October of 1974. Mm-hmm. So very close to where this body was found at the same time. And he pointed out there's an extra in one of the scenes on the beach wearing a blue bandana and jeans, and that looked pretty similar to the composite sketch that had been done of the woman that was found.
Yeah, I've seen the picture, and I agree. She does look very similar to what the composite.
Yeah, she does.
You know, computer generated and all that.
And the height and weight they gave and everything looks pretty similar.
Also saw the picture of Joe Hill, and he looks scarily like Stephen King.
Yes. Definitely Stephen King's son.
You can tell he's his son. Yes. You don't need a DNA test for that.
No.
But the thing was, yes, this girl was wearing Wrangler jeans. They were actually a different kind of Wrangler jeans than what were found at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, she had on a blue bandana, but in that era, in 1974, there were probably hundreds of thousands of girls that had Wrangler jeans and blue bandanas, because that was just a common dressing style of the way. So they did make note the jeans were of different ones. But what really amazed me is how close was this guy watching this movie to find that person? It was just in a background shot, just walking by.
For like a split second, too.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like an hour and 2 minutes into the movie or something like that.
Yeah.
And he sees this person there and determines, this is that girl. She was in that area. Now, we're talking about 100 miles away from where they shot it to where the body was found, where they shot the movie, that scene. So, I mean, sure, 100 miles isn't far to travel, but it's not like that's right where she was staying.
Right.
And the problem is, nowadays, as like I found out when I was an extra in the Marshall movie, they document that, because they document everybody that's there. You have to have, you know, your social security number, you have to sign forms and all this kind of stuff.
Well, it's just a security thing for the stars, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And also for them to keep track of payments, because they made, you know, not big payments, but we got like $50 each or something like that at the end of the day for 14 hours on set.
No, I couldn't do that.
We got $50 or something to that effect. But in those days, they didn't keep track of that. They just had people coming and going, and they didn't keep track of the extras or sign them all up or keep documents or anything like that. And they certainly weren't using computers.
Yeah.
So, you know, it would have just been any kind of scribbled down paper notes that they would have had, even if they did. So there was no way to look up who was on the set and try to identify that.
Especially like 40 years later.
Right.
That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, it just was not going to be. And so they tried to track this down, but they couldn't find anything to prove it. Yes, the girl bore a real similarity to what they thought they were looking for, but there was no way to prove it one way or another. And nobody from the movie, they contacted several people that had been in the movie, not just the stars, but other extras that they did know of. And nobody remembered this girl or what her name was or anything.
The only thing about that that's weird to me is I feel like if I would have been that woman and I would have seen people talking online suggesting I'm this, you know, missing, murdered person, maybe I'd be like, hey, no.
That's me. I'm right here.
Very much alive.
Well, but, you know, that's true. But, I mean, who's to say that she didn't die a year later from something else or something, you know? She got hit by a bus or something. Yeah. You know, you never know. People walk out in front of buses, I guess. I don't know.
Or, I mean, she just
movies.
Didn't hear about it. I guess this was a long time ago. Maybe she's not big in the internet.
But, you know, I do remember it's been, I don't know whether it was a 60 Minutes or a documentary, but there was something about that was on TV. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing that on TV once I started reading this case where Stephen King's son had said, I found that person in this movie. And I do remember seeing that on TV in some type of format.
Yeah.
And so it has gotten some traction out and around where you would think if you were that person, you would have heard something about an extra in a Jaws movie and you would have looked.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's me. Hey, I'm
Hold
right
on.
Here.
I was there.
I don't think I'm dead.
Yeah.
I feel like it some days, but I don't think I am.
Well, the
or
same.
Or like in Monty Python.
Not dead yet. The same thing happened to when they called a psychic that offered to come in and look at this case. And the psychic said, this is a Canadian nurse, either named Carolyn O'Leary or Marilyn O'Leary. Mm-hmm. They were like, well, this is not very specific. This does not give us much. Where did that come from? But apparently they had another person who called in saying they had reason to believe it was a nurse, an American nurse this time, but named Carolyn O'Leary. And that was two people now that they didn't think had any reason to know each other. So they looked into it, and eventually the real Carolyn O'Leary that they assumed they were talking about, a nurse, came forward and heard this and was like, no, I'm right here. I'm not dead. So that was disproven too.
I am not the Lady of the Dunes. And there was a guy, retired sergeant named Warren Tobias, who has been working on this for 20 years. And he said, well, while I admit the lady's very similar to what we're looking for, and it's possible that it could be her, it's highly improbable that it's her. That, you know, there's just nothing to indicate that would be her. The genes are a little bit different. And this guy's been working on the case for 20 years, so he really wants to solve it. So I feel like if he thought that was a real possibility, he would jump on it.
Yeah. There are a few other, I was, you know, perusing Reddit threads and unsolved mystery forums online, and there are a few other theories that a few people have that aren't very specific, that just seem like the only explanations for what could have happened. One was that it was someone who worked in the police field or someone who was in some way influential in the area, because apparently to get in and out through this national parkland area, you had to stop and buy a permit if you were in a vehicle. And they knew there were vehicle tracks, and they thought, well, if this would have been someone suspicious or someone sketch, you would think there'd be a record of them getting a permit at some point coming through this area. But there was no one that raised any red flags at any point traveling through there. So a lot of people think that the person who did this must have been involved in police work or that type of field in some way, which, I mean, also can make sense for the missing hands and teeth, because they would think to remove any sort of identifying features.
Well, they did say, and I didn't understand this till you just explained that about driving in into that area, that they checked out everyone with a permit or had permission or whatever to drive in that area. Mm-hmm. They did, you know, they had a record of everybody that had that, and they did check them all out, and they said every one of them checked out, I guess, either with an alibi or didn't meet the criteria or whatever they were looking for.
Right. Which, I don't know, you'd think if it was someone that was pretty obviously not supposed to be there, they would have said something. And obviously there was a car there, because tire tracks, and even if the tire tracks weren't the ones to bring her there, then there were tire tracks close enough someone saw her there and didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Now, the latest exhumation took place in 2020, and that was for the purpose of, they're trying, I guess, kind of as a last resort, the same thing as how they caught the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going through that genealogy tracing with the DNA to try to find an associated person that might be in the database that they could trace who she might be related to. So they're not trying to find the killer, but they're trying to figure out who this girl is after all this time. because that's the biggest mystery right now, is to solve who she is so they can even begin to try to figure who might have killed her.
Right. Well, and I mean, the same thing happened with the Somerton man. They thought they would start doing genealogy type stuff there because, I mean, at least with him, they had that beginning of a lead that he might be the father of this, you know, person, right, and maybe was married to this woman or had a child with this woman. So genealogy at that point could link him to people they already know, mm-hmm, that have already offered up DNA. But this is more of just a, you know, Hail Mary, like maybe
exactly
someone somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully they can at least identify who she is. But it's always strange to me when you have someone that is killed like this and no one ever reports them missing, or they do report them missing, but they don't ever put it together. Now, in 1974, they didn't have national databases for these things to go into, but they certainly have since then. Of course, you know, time makes it so that, who knows, but I guess if you're an orphan, or maybe if you come from another country, and in that era, news from America wouldn't have traveled to other countries that much about, right, murders and things like that. Nowadays, it's, you know, it's very common. You see the news of other places or big cases and things like that, but you wouldn't necessarily see it there. So it could have been somebody that came from another country that just the news didn't make it over there. But it just seems odd that somebody somewhere should be looking for you.
Yeah.
If that happens to you.
Yeah. I agree, especially because they said there was no one in the area within several hundred miles, from what I understood, that had even been reported missing,
mm-hmm,
that matched this description at all, which I thought was fascinating. They said in this area alone, Dukes and Nantucket counties in Massachusetts, there are 4 unidentified bodies and another 16 instances of unidentified human skeletal parts and a total of 11 unsolved homicides dating back from now to the 1970s. So apparently this is not that rare of an occurrence just in this small area, because it's not that big of a place.
Well, there's another body we don't know. Put them
16 instances of unidentified human skeletal parts.
That's pretty bad. Yeah, ultimately they took the Lady of the Dunes and buried her at a St. Peter cemetery, and her tombstone reads, "Unidentified female body found Race Point Dunes." And that's all they have on her inscription, and that's how she became known as the Lady of the Dunes.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's very sad. They had worked with extensively in 2010 with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children to try to find some kind of connection. And they even placed the victim's skull in a CT scanner to build an image of her face. Of course, you know, back in the old days, they did clay reconstructions and they did sketch artist reconstructions. Well, now they take the skull and scan it, and then they, mm-hmm, can make certain hypotheses out of that to show a computer-generated image of what this person probably looked like.
Right.
And so they use that, too. But still, nobody has come up with anything, or nobody has said, hey, I know that person, other than the ones that have come forward, which have not been able to be proven. That one that we were talking about, the one lady said she thought it was her sister. So by the time the police went to follow up with her, they couldn't find her,
mm-hmm,
to see, you know, who was your sister?
Yeah.
So they don't know where that lady went that said it was her sister. So
right.
Sometimes they're a little bit slow reacting, but I guess when it gets so old, and you get a lot of false leads that come in, you don't exactly jump up from your desk and run and go investigate them.
Right. I will say, though, it's interesting that all these cases just more easily and quickly solve lots of cases in the future. Although right now it's so new, it's like it's hard to find a match or know that you'll find a match because so few people compared to the whole population have their DNA submitted to one of those. But I feel like in a couple decades, everyone will, and it'll be hard to commit a crime and not get caught.
Well, when they microchip all of us and be able to track our movements and everything, that would eliminate it too. That would cut down on crime greatly, I believe.
No. I did think it was nice, though. They said in 2014, one of the case investigators raised funds to give this woman a new casket because they just had a thin metal one that she was in.
And it was deteriorating badly.
Yeah, so got her another one.
But how would you feel if you were one of the relatives that they trace this down to and said, who do you have that's a relative that might have lived in this area in this time frame or something like that? Now, it's one thing if it was identifying maybe you had a relative you didn't know about that,
right,
had been murdered. But what about if the relative that they're saying you're related to was the murderer?
Yeah, like the Golden State Killer.
Yeah, and you signed up for 23andMe, which you did before.
I did.
And they traced it and said, hey, we think your dad's a murderer.
Yeah.
How would you feel about that?
I mean, I've never... Now, if it was my dad, that'd be a little different. But I've never understood the people that say it's an invasion of their privacy if their DNA is used to find, like, some distant relative they may have or someone that shares some DNA with them that maybe was either killed or did kill people. Because it's like, I mean, if you want to take my DNA and just see, maybe I have a distant sixth cousin somewhere that did this thing, that's fine with me. Every day I get emails from 23andMe that says you have 15 new DNA relatives that share this percentage of DNA with you all over the country. It's like, I don't know these people. If you want to use my DNA to figure out one of them's a serial killer, go right ahead.
Well, I think the bigger question is government agencies having access to your DNA without your permission?
Sure.
And what you don't realize is you did give your permission when you signed up for 23andMe. And, you know, that's, and a lot of those other ones. Now, some of them since have stopped doing that.
Yeah.
I personally, I don't have a problem with it myself, because I think that whatever way we can find justice and find the right person is better. Because in a lot of cases, because of this, they've been able to exonerate other people that may have been charged with the crime or were suspects in the crime and lived their life with these things hanging over their heads and people saying they got away with it. So maybe it could clear somebody that's been living under a black cloud of this, you know, their whole life.
Yeah. Or, you know, get lots of people out of prison that aren't supposed to be there in the first place.
That's
true.
We
know there are people that have been even put to death or died in prison that later, after DNA testing became a bigger thing, they proved they actually hadn't done it.
Yeah, that's right.
Might avoid that.
That's true.
So, I don't know. I'm all for it. Take my spit and tell me if I'm related to any killers. That's cool with me.
Take my spit and tell me who did it.
Sure.
Well, if you have any clues about who the Lady of the Dunes is, or if you want more information, look that up, and they have good pictures of her.
Yeah.
And if you know of any missing relative you have that's never been found, make sure this isn't yours.
Yeah. And apparently there are lots more, too, just in Massachusetts, so.
Well, all right. Well, I guess that leads us to...
Legal briefs.
So Legal Briefs is a part of the podcast where Riley asked me questions about things. So, and then I see if I know anything, or if I was listening, or... if I was even awake.
So we didn't talk about this specifically.
Michael used to do that to me.
But I know we looked at some of the same articles. I know one of them was probably the Wikipedia page about the whole case, right?
Right.
Do you remember the two identifying accessories she had that they thought were distinct? One of them was something she had in her hair.
That was the bandana.
Well... yes, the bandana and the jeans, but I mean beyond that. We didn't talk about these specifically. I thought was interesting that these were such specific details.
Well, no, I don't remember.
Well, one was that she had a gold-flecked elastic band in her hair, and the other was that her toenails were painted a very bright pink.
Well, that's true. They did mention that her toenails were painted pink.
Yeah.
Although, I don't find that to be too uncommon.
Well, I don't find it to be uncommon either, but I did think it was interesting that these are two very specific details that they included. And again, would seem like another step towards, I don't know, either ruling someone out or ruling someone in.
Mm-hmm.
A gold-flecked band seems not that common. And also, do you remember the name of the missing criminal that they thought had escaped from prison and could possibly be the Lady of the Dunes?
Well, I've got it here somewhere. I could look it up. But she had been a bank robber that had escaped from prison, and they thought that might be it. But the only thing I've wondered is, why would anybody care about removing her hands? I mean, unless, like you suggested, a cop did it, and they caught her and killed her for something she had done, or they decided to serve their own justice, and then they removed her hands and stuff. And I guess a forearm, maybe there was an identifying tattoo or something. And so they removed a for those yeah. purposes.
And that was one theory, was that maybe whoever did this knew that this was a criminal, because I guess that was the only way you know someone would have their fingerprints in a database at this time, was if they had been arrested or was some sort of, you know, government person. So they suggested maybe they knew that this woman was a criminal and cut off her hands.
Now, this is one that we didn't go over, but I read in that same article. Let's see if you remember reading this. When they first found the body, they didn't realize it was missing its hands, because what was there where the hand should have been?
I don't know.
There was pine straw piled up.
Oh, I didn't know
that. At the end of her arms, where you couldn't tell there were no hands until you moved the pine straw.
So I wonder why.
It was deliberately arranged there,
yeah.
these piles of pine straw, where her hands would have been.
Interesting.
Yeah, they didn't say, they didn't have any theories as to why that was, but they just said the body was posed there, and there was also proof of post-mortem sexual assault.
I did see that.
Mm-hmm.
I did see that. I did not know there was pine straw piled there intentionally, I
yeah.
would assume.
And I don't know if that had something to do with all that, so that you didn't, the person didn't have to see the perpetrator didn't mm-hmm. have to see the missing hands, you know, the missing areas or what. I'm
yeah.
not sure.
Yeah, no.
But I found all that very, very interesting.
Yeah.
We go over these things, and it's not because we like them, but they're just interesting. They're things
yeah.
that I wish that we had the ability to solve them. I wish that
yeah.
there was ways to find out where these people were and track them down and remove them so they don't do it again. Was this a person that they knew and they did it? You know, like I say,
mm-hmm.
that's usually more of an intimate act when you pose the body.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it just a random act of violence? Who knows?
Just seems unbelievable that we can put people up in space. We still can't. There's a missing person. We can't figure out who it is.
We don't know who it is.
But I don't know. Maybe with everyone getting microchipped and giving the government their spit, one day there'll be no unsolved murders.
That's right. And there'll be less of them.
Yeah.
Because you'll know you'll be caught.
Exactly.
That's our conclusion.
Yes.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable Podcast for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's Random Thought is time. We are currently in the midst of our outdoor theater production of The Addams Family. In it, Grandmama has the line, "Time is a thief. I'm 102. How much longer have I got?" I think about that a lot these days, mostly because between work and these shows, I have no time. We are at the theater from 5:30 in the evening until midnight, every night, and I still have to work and help with grandkids. On top of that, I'm trying to keep up with two podcasts and an associated video production. Whew! That's the reason our episodes have been spotty and will probably continue to be through July when our second show finishes. Why do we do it? We don't get paid, and it literally runs us into the ground, physically and mentally. And there are no accolades to get, as we defer all those to our cast. So we work behind the scenes to create these shows and try to create something nice to give to our community. The main thing that makes it tolerable is the we that I mentioned. Mary, Riley, and I all do it together. Mary and I direct, do all the other behind-the-scenes stuff, while Riley is Wednesday in the Addams Family and directs the children's pre-show. So we all do it together. So being together is what makes the time spent on this endeavor worthwhile. That makes me think of a line the Wizard says to the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz, which is part of our July shows. Remember, a heart is not judged by how much you love, but by how much you are loved by others. Maybe that's what the time we spend on this means. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.